Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Thanks for joining us. I'm Melissa Harris-Perry, and this is The Takeaway. Now, for today's show, we're trying something a little different. A few weeks ago, we hosted a special The Takeaway Live. Now, if you haven't caught some of our live events on Facebook or Twitter yet, make sure you follow us so that you don't miss any more. Now, this event was a special kind of holiday preparation about gender affirmation. We had some fantastic guests who helped give our queer listeners and allies the language we all need to engage with loved ones this holiday season. So today, we're going to be playing for you some of the standout moments from the event. And maybe it will help some of you to have more joyful and affirming interactions with loved ones this week and throughout the year. So enjoy. We are officially in the holiday season. And we know that the holidays can be truly joyous. Listen, I love the holidays. I love the food. I love the silly bad movies on the Hallmark Channel. I love the kind of silly traditions. I love the food. So listen, at the same time that the holiday season can be joyous, it can also be very challenging. And it can be challenging for a lot of different reasons. Now, for some, the holidays really evoke very difficult childhood memories. For some people, the holidays are a reminder of loved ones lost. And for many, the holidays are a season of financial difficulty and worries about having enough. And today, we're talking about another holiday reality, one experienced by many folk this time of the year. And it's the experience of finding yourself sharing the season with loving but uninformed family members, or maybe worse, family members who will behave in ways that simply ignore or erase core aspects of your identities, or maybe most troubling of all, having to spend time with those who are openly hostile or even abusive. Because after all, not everyone's family can be as affirming and intersectional a love fest as NBC's Modern Family.
So Gloria was telling us about something that you said, something about you being gay.
What about it?
Okay, very aggressive, just saying.
We're just wondering, you know, why did you say that?
Because I'm gay.
But why do you think you're gay, sweetie?
We're learning about it in school.
Oh.
My friend Aldo's parents are Italian, so he's Italian, and you and Daddy are gay, so I'm gay.
Oh! All right, so we started with a little pop culture there, but pop culture also always tells us something about what we believe in the world. And one of the things we want to be sure that we do here is that we center folks who are at the center of multiple intersectionalities. And I promise that's all going to get clear as we talk. So we thought that before all the craziness of the holiday season, good, bad, and otherwise starts, that we would gather our community, the Takeaway community, for this live event. Now, think of this as a kind of pre-holiday, pre-game, happy hour. Hopefully, we're going to do a little laughing. We might do a little crying. We will definitely do some strategizing, but all of it with one goal: how to have a healthy, happy, gender-affirming season for all. So let's get started. I am thrilled to be joined today by three incredible women who are going to help us to laugh, learn, and strategize. First, we have Dr. Monique Morris. Dr. Morris is president and CEO of Grantmakers for Girls of Color. She's an award-winning author and social justice scholar. Dr. Morris is executive producer and co-writer of the documentary film Push Out, The Criminalization of Black Girls in School. Our next guest will be Imara Jones. Imara Jones is Emmy and Peabody Award winner, and Imara is the creator of Trans Lash Media and hosts the Webby-nominated Trans Lash podcast with Imara Jones, as well as the investigative limited series, The Anti-Trans Hate Machine, A Plot Against Equality. And finally, we have Bree Rivera. Bree is a Black trans femme who's dedicated over two decades of movement building for Black trans communities. She's a writer and co-creator of the Femme Queen Chronicles. And in 2020, Bree launched the Black Trans Fund. Bree was also a founder and executive director of Trans Sisters of Color Project Detroit, the first Black trans-led organization in Michigan. Welcome to the Takeaway Live, Monique, Imara, and Bree. Nice to have you all.
So nice to be here.
Yeah.
Monique, I want to start with you. I'm going to play a little something, and this comes from Black Girl Freedom Week.
Happy Black Girl Freedom Week, the first of many, many, many.
First ever. Here we go.
Chant down Babylon, Black people are the bomb.
Ooh, my Black Girl Freedom Dream.
My Black Girl Freedom Dream.
My Black Girl Freedom Dream is for us Black girls to feel comfortable within our skin.
Black girls can unapologetically like be ourselves without the inequality, the judgment.
People need to start seeing Black girls and gender expansive youth as human beings who are sacred, who deserve love.
They don't know how to handle Black girls because they instantly treat us with brutality and force.
How are we going to reach out to young Black disabled girls?
I want to show Black trans joy. We need more and more and more of what happens through the power of love among all Black women.
Thank you so much for sharing that clip. Black Girl Freedom Week is a part of the $1 billion for Black Girls campaign that is a signature effort of Grantmakers for Girls of Color in partnership with many of our grantee partners and a number of foundations. Grantmakers for Girls of Color is the only intermediary philanthropic organization that is exclusively focused on resourcing movements and organizations that are led by and centered around cis and trans girls, femmes, and gender expansive youth of color in the United States. The Black Girl Freedom Week is a week that we have claimed in February to amplify all the amazing things that Black girls contribute to our learning, to our space, to our world. It is a part of the Black Girl Freedom Fund, which is a fund that is focused on resourcing organizations and movements that are centering Black girls. And we are really thrilled to share that information with you. But also, we have launched another fund in partnership with the Black Trans Fund and Bree called Holding a Sister Initiative that is for trans girls of color. And it's the first of its kind. And I'm thrilled to be in the space to share just a little bit more about what we're doing together.
We're going to go to Imara. And Imara, I want to take a brief look at this video from Translash.
All of the progress we have made on LGBTQ rights, whether it be social, political, or now medical, trans people have been essential to that change and essential to that story. The modern LGBTQ movement was launched by two trans women, Marsha P. Johnson and Sylvia Rivera, who started the riot at Stonewall.
This is a landmark moment. It's history. It's our history. It's Black trans history.
But even at a moment of intense racial reckoning in America, Black trans people continue to be the most marginalized of the marginalized.
All right, Imara, tell us a little bit about how Translash Media fits into the work you're doing these days.
Translash Media fits into the work that I'm doing these days because it's the essential expression of what I believe is a crucial part of what we need in order to get free. And that is the ability to be able to tell our own stories, to be able to tell our own stories in ways that center our humanity, to be able to tell our own stories in as many ways as we can, because we know that not everyone receives information in the same way, and to understand that communicating our stories and communicating our humanity are an essential, if not pivotal, tool that we need to use and exercise in order to get free. And there are lots of different ways to do that. And there are lots of different types of stories to tell. Of course, there's entertainment, There are plays, there are a variety of media, but we specifically focus on at Translash telling actual stories and using the tools of journalism and personal storytelling and narrative in order to be able to do that. And so not only is that through the podcast that you just described, but also through video, through documentary, through a zine. Our next zine is coming out next month, focusing on trans migration, actually across borders and within borders and within our bodies. We also do so through digital and social media, and just look for as many opportunities as we can to get out these stories, because again, one of the things that the right has done really successfully in this country is to mobilize storytelling in order to be able to shape narrative and to drive policy and to drive political changes. And so we are doing that from the opposite spectrum, but by centering trans stories. And as we say in that video, trans people are the most marginalized of the marginalized, facing unemployment rates twice that of Black people overall, four times that of the general population. 2021 is on track to be a year in which we break the record for violence against Black trans people, which has been broken for several years in a row. And so we also face a year in which there are 127 pieces of anti-trans legislation pending in nearly 40 states in this country. And so if there's ever a time for us to be able to mobilize and to use storytelling as an essential tool in saving our lives, that's now is it. And that's what Translash does. And that's at kind of the core of my work.
Bree, I want to come to you. We're going to show a little video here that's actually some throwback, not the work you're doing right now, but okay, work that is foundational to your work. So let's take a look.
I think it's really important, and I know it's really important, that we have an organization such as Trans Sisters of Color Project that are focused on trans women of color. And the reason it's important is because narrative for trans women of color need to be uplifted. And who better to uplift the trans women of color voices than trans women? And so organizations that work with trans women are amazing, but we needed an organization that was working directly with the people that we are, so we need to serve them.
All right, Bree, tell us about that foundational work and what you're up to now.
I run the Black Trans Fund, which is the nation's first fund that centers joy and liberation in Black trans communities. A lot of the work that I've done in movement has really been centered around joy and liberation work, which is key to the survival of Black trans communities. I started this fund 2 years ago, and it was something I had been working on for a while, really just wanting to name that I myself and other Black trans leaders across the country were paying for work out of pocket, just really struggling to provide essential first responding resources to communities. And so I wanted to create a space where, one, joy and liberation is at the center of everything that we do, and also wanted to create a space in philanthropy where Black trans communities are the recipients and make funding decisions on behalf of our communities, which is super important.
As a mom of a now 19-year-old, which means that at 19, she has an opportunity to make all kinds of choices and consent to being in different places. But for 17 years, I had to put her on a plane every Thanksgiving, whether I wanted to or not. And that was the nature of the court-based agreement. And look, I never feared for her physical safety in some ways, but certainly had concerns about her emotional safety, but didn't have a choice except to put her on that plane. So I'm also wondering about the ways that folks who may have less opportunity to make choices about whom they are around, and maybe especially for minors. Do you have strategies around how to try to prioritize your safety when you maybe can't leave the space?
Everything that you just said reminded me of when I was a young person and couldn't, you know, talk about like my dreams of being the person that I am now, and how a lot of that took me to a place of retreat. So very standoffish to myself in my room a lot. But one of the things that I've come to realize that was a blessing in all of that was that all that time I was dreaming, I was like, you know what? Don't nobody understand me. I see this vision. Let me build on it. And I know that that's not like, it seems kind of patronizing to just say, you know, it gets better or like wait till you're older. But, you know, I think one of the things that's been really helpful for me in that moment was just reflecting. And so, you know, for those people who sometimes getting away means just retreating into yourself, take all of that time to just figure out who you are, love on yourself, and make a plan.
Imara or Monique, would either one of you all like to add in on this one?
I can just would also say briefly, I think try to develop a support system if you can. So if you have friends that you know you can connect with or see afterwards, do that. If you can text with them throughout your time with your family, do that. Anything that's a lifeline outside of a confining situation can be really consequential. And I would urge you to do that. And also, you know, a lot of times everyone will have at least one family member that has their back or that they can confide in. And even amidst a sea of 30 or 40 people, there's usually one other person. And I would say stick close to that person throughout the entire time that you are with your family.
Yeah, that's exactly where I was gonna go, which is also if you are that family member and you know you're the safe person, then make sure you show up as the safe person, right? Mm-hmm. I have held many conversations with folks about the gender continuum and they may not understand what I'm saying, but I make myself known, right? And so the visibility for those of us who can hold space with those who are more vulnerable is also really important, especially now.
Mm-hmm. Right, because the young person in your life, you may not know the young person in your life who needs you to indicate that you're
exactly.
safe, right?
Exactly.
And so your discourse, your language, exactly. your like holding that space
exactly.
is also that signal. Come here. It's all right.
Exactly.
Here.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's a power dynamic, right? Adults have power. Yeah. Elders have power. Mm-hmm. And so when you're a young person trying to articulate your own identity, trying to understand your own identity, there is the safety of going inward, but there's also an important role for those who are in the family and more visible and who have the capacity to hold power in a way that creates a safe, you know, foundation for everybody to be received with love. And that is a critical part also.
I'm wondering about one more version of putting your safety at the core. And this is going to look a little different. So for young people who maybe not middle school, high school, but maybe they're college age and they've learned a lot of things in the world and their identity is developing, emerging, they're ready to talk about new pronouns. Do you have advice strategies for the times to push those conversations versus times to protect oneself? And I just want to be, I want to be careful about how I ask this because it's not about like, oh, don't say something, but it's more like, are there signals that we should be thinking forward towards that say, you know, you are still fully standing in your truth, even if you don't fight with Uncle Dave, and I'm gonna call him Uncle Dave because like some of us have Dave Chappelle sitting at our table. And so if Dave Chappelle is at your table, you're gonna wear yourself out trying to, you know, be in a space and maybe like just letting him live in ignorance is better, but maybe not. So I'm interested in what you all might say around that.
I may not be the best example.
You go straight through all the time, Amara?
Kind of.
Yes.
So I fight without fear nor favor. So I think that that may not be the best strategy. But again, I think especially a young person or especially people who are vulnerable, you have to prioritize your safety. And sometimes that means not saying anything. And sometimes that means keeping your mouth shut. And sometimes that means getting up from the table. I know that actually when I was a kid, that was my survival strategy, which is probably why I'm the opposite as an adult. But that was my survival strategy. And it was necessary. And I used it to great effect. And so I think that if you can, of course, speak up for yourself and there's space that you have to do that and you are willing and able to be in a family where you can express yourself and know that there'll be at least some support, then do that. If you don't have that and your family is the only option to feel safe during the holidays for a lot of different reasons, because Black people make trade-offs all the time, then do that as well. But prioritize your safety. But I would lean towards clash.
So look, I love that. And I appreciate that you like gave us, what I guess mostly what I'm trying to go towards is a space where there's no shame in whatever you have to do to survive. So to hear you say, you know, at one point the strategy was to get up from the table and now it's to have that fight, right? At least discursively. I feel like, you know, as a survivor, I spent 10 years being silent and I can't be ashamed of those 10 years because they let me survive that decade, right? And, but now I can never be quiet about anything ever because it was like I used all my be quiet muscles for those 10 years. And then when I finally was able to speak, now I want to always speak. But I don't want to have to be ashamed of either one or other young people or elders, by the way, to be ashamed of either one if that's the space they're in to survive.
And also really quickly, you know, like doing whatever it takes to survive is the way that Black people have survived.
Oof, ain't that the truth? Now, y'all stay right there. The Takeaway will be back with more of this gender affirmation conversation when we return.
WNYC Studios is supported by Rocket Money. Did you know nearly 75% of people have subscriptions they've forgotten about? Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills so that you can grow your savings. Rocket Money will even try to negotiate your bills for you by up to 20%. All you have to do is submit a picture of your bill, and Rocket Money takes care of the rest. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of $500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when using all of the app's features. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/WNYC. That's rocketmoney.com/WNYC.
Hi, I'm Helga Davis. On my show, I speak with artists and thinkers about how to uncover the extraordinary in everyday life. People like musicians Brittany Howard and Sampha, Broadway director Whitney White, scholar Noli Way Rooks, and playwright Suzanne Laurie Parks. These are fearless conversations where we don't just meet each other, we meet ourselves. Join us. Listen to Helga wherever you get podcasts.
Hey everybody, I'm Melissa Harris-Perry and this is The Takeaway. We're going to continue to listen back to our Takeaway Live intergenerational conversation on gender affirmation. For this event, I spoke with Dr. Monique Morris, President and CEO of Grantmakers for Girls of Color, Imara Jones, creator of Translash Media, and Bree Rivera, writer and co-creator of the Femme Queen Chronicles. And Monique and Bree, now they're going to jump in here with their survival or coping strategies around some of, well, let's call them unkind family members at the dinner table during the holidays.
I feel like it's hard, especially for like folks who are young. I feel like it gets better when you get older because you can actually like walk away, not respond, not be in relationship. So yeah, sending a lot of care to folks who are in that situation because it's just like really hard. I think for me as an adult, one of the things that was hard for me to deal with as an adult, having conversations with adults that took care of me when I was younger, was that folks knew, could see, identify things about me that were different, but chose to stay silent. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, for young people who know that aunt, that uncle, that grandma, that's just gonna give them a little bit of care and just hold close to them and have conversations with them. That was the thing I was afraid of. I knew that these folks saw me, but wasn't really clear as to like what I could share with them. But going back, I definitely would have had like more conversations with those folks.
So Monique, maybe you can build on that a little bit too about if you're in this space, how do we make sure that it's clear our love is unconditional so that our young people can have some space to speak with us, to breathe, to so that we can be the person who gets texted if they're at the table they don't want to be at?
I mean, I think one of the best ways for us to establish that kind of safety is to just have open conversations about how homophobic, transphobic language conversation is not tolerated in this house, right? Like we're all accustomed to house rules, right? And I think in so many ways we let things go because people are over or, you know, company sort of creates a new set of house rules. But, you know, you go to grandmama's house, that's grandma's house. That's gonna be grandma's rules all the way around. Now, if grandma is problematic or grandpa is problematic, then, you know, I think it's worth, again, though, identifying mm-hmm. that other adult who can help to establish a new set of safe space or a new set of rules to ensure that you know, the language and way that we are talking around the table is one that is, you know, conducive to the spread of love. And I think a lot of times people want to do right. I think you establish that, you know, by saying that, you know, sometimes folks just have no idea how to honor one's pronouns, right? Like, have no idea how to make sure the space is one where, you know, the grandbaby feels safe, or, you know, the daughter or son feels safe in who they are. And, you know, I think a lot of that just comes from the, you know, the Vegas mentality of, you know, what happens here stays here, or what happens over there stays there. It's the same sort of mentality that fuels the kind of sexual violence. We know that the patriarchy and gender-based violence and transphobia and homophobia are all linked. We know they're connected deeply. And so I think establishing across the board and identifying folks who can hold that space is just really, incredibly important. And then also, you know, supporting the capacity of folks to have that external network, where instead of criticizing a young person for being on their phone, if they're on their phone, understanding that may be their connection to their lifeline, right? That may be their connection to the space. So instead of being like, why are you always on your phone? Get off your phone. Say something like, you know, what do you need? Are you okay? Like, who are you talking to? Or you need to talk to that person? Okay, all good. You know, just have conversations instead of assuming that everyone feels safe in a space, because they may not.
I want to start with a question that comes directly from my father. My dad is just turned 80 years old. He is like the civil rights guy. He went to Howard University in the late 50s, early 60s. He was there at the March on Washington. Like, this is the guy who signed our birthday cards, "The Struggle Continues," right? That's this guy. So we're at his birthday dinner, and he turns in all earnestness and says, "Melissa, I got to ask you about these emails I get." And I was like, "Oh no, what is this?" And he's like, "On the bottom of the email, sometimes it'll say she, her, or he, him, or they, them. What does that mean? And what am I supposed to do with that?" And so I'm going to call this guy Grandpa Bill, because that's my daddy is William. And I feel like he was asking that question with all sincerity and all desire to do the right thing, but also as an 80-year-old who doesn't work in the workplace, hasn't really encountered this particular set of taglines and pronouns. How about you respond to Grandpa Bill?
I would offer to Grandpa Bill that there, just as there were new cultures emerging around how people identify racially, how folks were taking control of their own identities in our racial justice movements, where we moved from Negro to colored, to Black, to African-American, that we are seeing many communities emerge along their gender identity as well. And that sometimes people hold a space along the gender continuum that is explicitly in their souls masculine, some feminine, some in the middle, some along the way, and expressed in all the ways. And that this is an effort for folks to create space for us to see and acknowledge all of them in the same way that we always want to be seen and acknowledged as who we are. Many of us, you know, sometimes what I would offer too is that sometimes in our communities, people see that as a white thing or as an explicitly non-Black thing. And I think that it's important to also educate and remind folks that we have always been present along a continuum of gender, that our ancestors have always been present in a way that allows for us to see the richness of the human experience, and that this is just a way that people are able to explicitly name it so that they are respected from the moment they're greeted and welcomed into our communities.
Imara or Brady, you want to jump on for Grandpa Bill seminar?
Yeah, I think an easy way that I would say that is that you can't tell people's gender or gender identity from their name. And so what people have started to do is to put that into at the bottom of their emails as a part of their signature, so that you know and understand and don't make mistakes. I think that's what I would say. I think it's pretty straightforward. So even if you are a cis person named Dana, it could be really beneficial to put what your gender identity is in your signature so that it doesn't get lost. And it's also true for a whole host of people. I think that's what I would say to him. I think it's the most straightforward answer. And then he would say, okay, well, I get that, but what about the they, them?
Right.
Right. Because that's going to be the next question, because the first part he would probably get. And I would say, well, there are a lot of people who don't feel like their gender identity aligns with the definitions as we created them as male and female or masculine and feminine. And so that those people now, instead of just putting up with it and swallowing and believing that they had to identify with an identity that didn't correspond to them, they now feel comfortable saying they, them. And so that's how I respond to that. And it's so interesting because a lot of times when I've explained things like that to elders, they're like, oh yeah, that's like so-and-so who lived on my street growing up. Like they can make the connection, especially when it doesn't become about their identity. It's about the way that other people are identifying. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't mean that your father has to shift the way that he identifies or the way that he describes himself. It's about something else.
When I'm talking about the they, them, I always remind my fellow Southerners that we use y'all with no problem, right? So I get why they, them is, it can actually grammatically do kind of a pause because you're like, okay, we're doing they or them, but we're doing it in the singular. And I was like, yeah, but we say y'all in the singular and in the plural all the time. And it actually doesn't necessarily cause us to have to stop and make our nouns and verbs agree, right? We can just see that as together. Oh, somebody done told us from Facebook, tell Grandpa Bill that we've been to call me by my name and call me by my pronouns. Look, Grandpa Bill is really trying. And I know the Grandpa Jim on the other side, who's an English professor, would be like that they, them as a singular is going to be troubling. But that's not true though.
That's false.
But it's not. That's right. It's not necessarily.
It's false. It's false. Like the entire thing is that, like, you know, Webster's Dictionary, the people whose job it is to know about words, you know, wrote an entire essay about the use of they, them as a singular pronoun beginning with William Shakespeare. So the people whose job it is to know about the English language say that those people who say that they know actually don't know. Mm. So what you've gotten is a reduced third grade idea of what grammar is and not an adult sort of master's degree English literature understanding of what the English language is. And so you need to grow your understanding in order to understand that they, them is proper and has been for 600 years.
Also, there's a way to expand the understanding, right? And to recognize that there are multiple ways that we can come to construct our understanding and use of language. And, you know, in addition to it, you know, having a legitimate proper usage, we also just have to understand that, you know, we are very fluid with language, that language is emergent. And the idea that it's fixed in this way, and this is, I'm a writer, right? I go through and edit things and write, and I can do the stickler thing too, but I'm also very clear that we create all the time. So that should not be somehow, you know, received as a limitation in this particular context. We're still creating. Mm-hmm. And it's okay.
On this, I want to also go to Amar, your point about when I explain it to people that way, they'll go, oh, I remember so-and-so from my block, so-and-so from my church, so-and-so from the family. I'm also wondering about, so we've talked a little bit about those who might be sort of aggressively negative. And we've talked about some of those who are like doing the best they can, but it can be triggering or troubling. What about those who just erase, who like, oh, I remember that, but then also I chose not to see. I'm wondering if there are ways to make oneself purposely visible without the, I mean, there's obviously such danger in being hyper-visible in some spaces, but I'm also just thinking again, in terms of strategies, and maybe especially for our young people at this time of year, how do you say, look, no, you're gonna have to see all of me, right?
I mean, I think that there's so many different ways to do that. I think one of the things that I have taken to doing, I have a slight caveat to this, but basically I correct people in real time. So if you get misgendered in real time, stop them in real time and go, you know, like stop it in real time, like just to cut them off and do that. And I think that that's a really important thing. Or if they're an elder, at the end of their conversation, you could say, you know, I really appreciate what you said, but this is the way that you refer to me, and this is actually how I see myself. And then certain people, when they say, have said to me in the past, oh, well, you know, this is just how I've come to know you. And I say, well, your understanding then has changed. Like, I don't, that doesn't, and what? So like, it's like you have to, you get to correct people, and there are lots of different ways to correct people that actually aren't confrontational, that are respectful, but also get people to do. And we have to remember that erasure is a form of violence, right? Erasure is a form of violence. And so that erasure is not polite. It actually is an attack on you. And if you experience it as such, you get the opportunity to be able to say something.
All right, we're going to enter into our speed round here. And speed round means I'm just going to throw out questions. They might be silly. They might be very serious. But, you know, just sort of this is your respond in your swift way. You can use humor. You can use sadness. You can use information, however it works for you. So our first speed round is, if you have a choice, do you sit at the grown-up table or the kids table?
I'm sitting with the kids because they got snacks.
Grown-up table, I need a drink.
Yeah, okay, yes, all right, I'm with you. Amara, grown-up table or kids table?
In spirit, I'm at the kids table, but it's too low. I have to sit at the grown-up table. It's a practical thing. It's practical.
No, that's very, very fair. All right, for your holiday on the table, is it turkey, ham, or is it vegan quinoa casserole?
Vegan quinoa casserole. And I think me and Monique Sharon.
Yeah, but I'm gonna make some vegan spinach lasagna.
Oh, and I'm gonna make it. Okay. Imara, what you got there?
I have never eaten anything vegan nor prepared anything vegan for Thanksgiving ever.
God bless you. Yes, all right. Okay, now this one's a little bit more serious. Over the while we've been talking, at several points we've talked about, find resources. So do you have a resource that you want to share? Is there an online resource, a social media resource, a space where if I'm stuck at the table and I really in this moment need to reach out? So resources, and I'll start with you, Imara.
I call Trans Lifeline. You can find them not only online, but you can follow them on Instagram, and all the information is there. But call Trans Lifeline.
Thank you. Bree.
I would say contact Black Trans Travel Fund. They help folks with passports, airfare, ground support, and they have a list of other Black trans-led organizations that are providing mutual aid to folks during the holidays.
My thanks to Dr. Monique Morris, President and CEO of Grantmakers for Girls of Color, Imara Jones, creator of Translash Media, and Bree Rivera, writer and co-creator of the Femme Queen Chronicles. The holiday season is upon us, and while many of us hoped we'd get to this Thanksgiving with the pandemic behind us, here we are again. So, we asked you about your plans for this second pandemic Thanksgiving and how they compare to your 2020 Turkey Day. And here's what you had to say.
Hi, this is Tanya from Adams, New York. For Thanksgiving this year, I am hoping to be able to return to in-person volunteering to serve dinners at our local VFW for free. Last year, we weren't able to do that, and they did delivery only. And this year, we're hoping to be able to have people in to sit down and eat. And then we also get the benefit of conversation with them while they're there.
My name is Joseph Ulrich, and I reside in Vancouver, Washington. We have decided not to celebrate Thanksgiving as it is most commonly celebrated. We have decided to make this Indigenous Peoples Day, as was done with Columbus Day. The falsehoods surrounding Thanksgiving are just too much for us, and we felt we could not ignore what has happened to Native Americans, because there is so much more to discover if you dig.
My name is Edward Vernon. I'm calling from Aurora, Colorado. We will not be coming together for a second year in a row. We will, however, be giving thanks for who we are, what we have, and where we're from. Thank you so very much. you all have a safe holiday.
My Thanksgiving this year is going to be the same as it was last year because we had the pandemic going last year as well. Last year I wasn't immunized. This year I am, but the problem is that I'm immunocompromised and I have to avoid crowded indoor spaces. So I'm just going to be alone this year like last year. Going to get a Hungry Man Thanksgiving dinner and just remember what I do have to be thankful for. This is Mary from Philadelphia.
Hi, my name is Gina. I live in Phillipsburg, New Jersey. Every adult in our household is vaccinated, but due to the fact that we have a child under 5 who will not yet be vaccinated by Thanksgiving, we are still having a low-key holiday just like last year.
This is Kat in Portland, Oregon. This Thanksgiving, I'll be driving 17 hours to spend time with my friends, and I'd be lying if I said it hasn't been incredibly stressful to even imagine this trip. But we're getting tested, we're vaccinated, doing everything right, and now that it's only a few days away, I can finally let myself feel excited.
This is Katrina in Maplewood, New Jersey. Last Thanksgiving, it was just me and my daughter and my son. And this Thanksgiving, I'm having an open house brunch for everyone, vaccines required, because my son has gotten his first shot. But we'll have open windows and steak and latkes and all kinds of wonderful brunch things. And I'm so excited that people are able to come together, although we'll still use safety measures, but we'll be together and that's what's important.
All right, y'all, trust me, we get what you're feeling. And some of us here at The Takeaway wanted to share as well.
Hi, this is Meg. I'm a producer on The Takeaway. On Thanksgiving morning, I'll be stocking up the neighborhood community fridge, and then I'll hop on the train to see my family for a small, intimate holiday gathering. Last year, I spent the day by myself, so this will be a nice change of pace.
My name is Ethan Oberman. I'm the senior producer for The Takeaway. Last year, my Thanksgiving was just me, my mom, and my stepdad. And this year, it's going to be just the three of us plus my aunt. So still keeping it small, which isn't a bad thing in my opinion. I will once again try to find a good vegetarian main dish that does not include tofurkey.
Hi, my name is Shanta Covington, and I'm the planning editor for The Takeaway. Thanksgiving this year will look pretty much like Thanksgiving last year, small and intimate with one addition and that of my boyfriend. And I actually get to have a second Thanksgiving this year with myself, my boyfriend, his son, and a few of our friends. But don't get it twisted, we are all vaccinated. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone.
Hi, I'm Katarina Barton, and I'm a producer on The Takeaway. Last year, I just celebrated Thanksgiving with some friends. But this year, now that we're all vaccinated, my parents and my brother are coming to visit me in New York for the first time since I moved here 3 years ago. We're going to a Broadway show, and I'm excited for the excuse to be a tourist all weekend.
Hi, I'm Deborah, a producer on The Takeaway. This year, my family is hosting a Thanksgiving feast, but before giving thanks, we'll be taking COVID tests to accommodate some of our unvaccinated family members whom we love very much but don't always understand. Needless to say, we have agreed to leave talk of politics and vaccinations at the door so we can appreciate being all together this year.
This is Mary. I am the executive producer of The Takeaway. This year, my family and I are going to travel by car to my in-laws and hoping with the help of some tests and vaccines and boosters that it will be a relatively safe and healthy Thanksgiving holiday.
Hey, it's David Gable. Last year, in the thick of the pandemic, I took myself on a little solo hiking trip weekend and spent a good amount of time also writing in my journal all the things I was grateful for. This year, I'm vaccinated, I'm comfortable traveling, I'll be joining friends for dinner, and I'm still going to write in my journal all the things I'm grateful for. One of them being, I get to work at The Takeaway.
My name is Jackie Martin. I'm the line producer here for The Takeaway. And this year for Turkey Day, instead of me cooking, I usually fry a turkey, I make beni, arroz con gandules, all the good stuff. But this year we're going to go to Morton's. And, you know, it'll be something new. I won't have to cook and clean. It'll be a little less stressful for me. We are all vaccinated. We have our booster shots, so it'll be safe. It will not become our tradition, but it should be less stressful, which is always good.
My name is Zachary Bynum. I'm a digital producer for The Takeaway. And this Thanksgiving, I will be spending the holiday with my family in Georgia. We've got some family coming in from out of town, which we did not have last year. I have a lot of older family and people who are immunocompromised in my family. So we've had to make some adjustments in the past because of the pandemic. But now everyone's vaccinated, everyone's excited and ready to spend some time. We really need it. We definitely really need it. So I'm so excited.
I'm Joseph Jedian, a producer here at The Takeaway, and I'm going to Delaware this year to visit my girlfriend's parents for Thanksgiving, and it's just going to be the immediate family, and they're going to Zoom in people from across the country, like cousins, aunts, and uncles, and that should be fun. In comparison, my family, we don't do anything on Thanksgiving. We sometimes like make sandwiches and like go to the movies.
Meanwhile, as we sign off, I'm going to whisper a bit because thanks to the joy of vaccines and boosters, 15 members of my family have once again gathered for our annual food and fun fest. We got little ones plopped on air mattresses and my office slash radio studio is serving as an in-law guest room. Shh! There's going to be turkey, pie, and yes, gumbo on our tables and in our bellies. And all of it is organized by yours truly, who does indeed make a Thanksgiving spreadsheet to keep track of it all. Thanks to my team and thanks to all of you for sharing. And a big thank you to everybody who took the time out to listen and to call. We appreciate it.
That's all we have for you today. We hope you enjoyed it, and I hope it helps y'all out tomorrow when you gather with friends and family. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Melissa Harris-Perry, and this is The Takeaway. Stay safe, y'all.